everybody. I'm Jordan Tenenbaum, host of Soligo's Technology Leader Podcast. Today, we are joined, as always, by my co-host, Mark Simon, Soligo's Vice President of Strategy, as well as Wes. Hey, Mark, as well as Wes Duquette, who's a Vice President and General Manager of B2B Technology at ShipBob. Wes, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. We are very excited to have you. This should be an incredible episode with a whole bunch of in-depth e-commerce information. We're going to kick off this podcast like we normally do, Wes. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are. And once you enlighten our listeners with that information, could you talk to us a little bit about what ShipBob is and what problems you strive to solve for your customers?
Yes, I would be glad to. My career journey to ShipBob has been a pretty interesting one in mostly the technology space. So I actually started my career as a management consultant. So there's plenty of people kind of start in the general management consultant world. But oddly enough, my management consultant focus was supply chain. So I've had this kind of interesting trajectory through a bunch of different areas of technology. And as we'll get to, ShipBob is a supply chain technology company. But I spent a number of years in management consulting, moved into a little bit more specific to telecom. And since then, I've been in both the dot-com and specific into the e-commerce space. So prior to being at ShipBob, I was at Adobe Commerce, or many may know it as Magento Commerce. So spent a number of years at Magento Commerce, focused on a couple different areas, account management, leadership. We also had a bunch of our technology and sales engineering teams that I led. And then I've been at ShipBob for about 3 years now. And yes, at ShipBob, I lead our what we call B2B and retail side of the house. So historically, ShipBob was a very focused on the direct consumer fulfillment space. We have expanded our scope and offerings to offer many of our brands, as we would call merchants, many of our brands now this omni-channel experience around fulfillment. And so the really great thing that you start to see with these small brands as they grow is there's many other channels they look to get into and many other channels, you know, they successfully are able to be in. And ShipBob now meets them where they want to sell. So not only if it's direct to consumer from their website, we fulfill that those goods out of our warehouse. But as those merchants grow, we now have the opportunity to fulfill goods to retailers, to marketplaces, things of that nature. And so a big part of what my group brings is truly that omni-channel technology and fulfillment solution to a brand.
Fantastic.
Wes, that's great. You threw out a term there that you hear a lot nowadays. And I think as time has gone on, it's sort of evolved in its usage. How do you define omnichannel for the listener? What really is that in modern terms as it pertains to modern commerce these days?
Yeah, you know, it used to be as simple as saying, do I do more than one channel? Meaning, you know, direct to consumer is where I start. And usually what we saw with our pure play online brands was the easy way to become omnichannel was saying, oh, I also sell on Amazon via FBA or something of that nature, really. And what you find with that is, you know, that hasn't really become what I now look at as truly omnichannel because you're not necessarily reaching a new audience or a new buyer. Once you get to what we've now kind of over the last kind of 12, 18, 24 months started to see as this true omni-channel is being in a very strategic place across many different channels and many different types of buyers, especially from a consumer standpoint, right? So not only do you have your direct consumer channel, but you've also started to figure out strategically which marketplaces to be on and how to be on those. And so certainly, you know, Amazon still has a very big place to play for a consumer brand, but it's how they go at it strategically. Same thing when you look at further in omnichannel, when you start to think about being in retail, and typically that kind of goes in two forms. It could be on shelves at retail. So it's true what we call retail distribution, or there is, you know, the dropship type of retail. Are you on Target.com, Walmart.com, those type of things? And so what I've seen, you know, more holistically in omnichannel is how do you use all of those different channels with a strategy behind it? Are you using different SKUs in those types of strategies, using different packaging? How are you going about that? And yes, that's where I think it's really become, you know, omnichannel became a very big buzzword, but now the strategy about how you do it as a brand has become the most important.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's, you know, you're talking about something that when we look at growing e-commerce companies, that's often a big leap. You might get started, whether it's a, you know, in the initial e-commerce channel is the primary revenue channel for the company, or maybe it's a larger, more established organization, its first foray in e-commerce. But either of those scenarios, that first movement from a single avenue, a single sales channel, broadening out into this omnichannel world, that's a really big step in my experience for companies. That's a challenging one. And how are some of the ways that, like, at ShipBob, you're helping to solve that and sort of ease that transition, so to speak?
Yeah, Mark, really good question and interesting area. So, you know, I didn't get too much into the ideal customer profile ShipBob, but I think this will hit on pretty well the type of, you know, merchant base and brands that we work with. We focus primarily on SMB merchants, so small and medium businesses. Many of these brands have started off as founder, you know, created in their garage at some point in time, started off as a pure play online, you know, typically just a Shopify storefront, right? At some point in their history, they've had this nice upward trajectory, you know, whether it was a viral post or whether they've really grown a good audience through their either personal Instagrams or other marketing channels, right? But they get to this certain point where they really have an opportunity to start to grow their brand beyond kind of that initial channel. But it's a big step. So, you know, I mentioned the going on Amazon. That's a very easy step. Most of the technology works the same. It's a pretty straightforward, like being in Shopify. But there's a true maturity that needs to happen in a brand in order to be in retail. So, you know, no matter how many followers you may have or how many, you know, good marketing posts you put out on TikTok, there is still a big leap to be in retail. And a couple of those things are really just, you know, we work with a lot of our brands to be retail prepared, meaning, do you have barcoding that's required, the right UPCs? Do you have the right packaging? You know, a lot of these things come down to almost the physical needs of your product. And then you start to leverage your 3PL as we are to make sure that it leaves the facility on time. It's what we call on time in full or OTIF. So all of those types of things are this big leap from sending single packages out to customers' doorsteps and thinking about how you're a bigger player in those channels. And I think the biggest thing that, you know, is one, a lot of the advisory we give is that initial preparation for going omnichannel, if you will. But one of the other major considerations is, what are the economics around these channels? So being able to start to break down, you know, our merchant base and most SMBs know their direct consumer, you know, acquisition costs and economics pretty well, right? Mm-hmm. But as they start to look into other channels, they start to find that, gosh, maybe I didn't want that massive order from a Walmart. Maybe the economics of those orders aren't right for my business. And so one of the other areas we try to advise is, we certainly want to help you grow your business, but let's think about scaling it in the right way and making sure that what you're going to do is going to be accretive to your overall mission or strategy with an omnichannel.
That's really interesting. How do you help companies get that that additional level of insight? So to kind of double click into that, because I think that's one I've certainly in my past in e-commerce, working with clients in the past, working with customers. Now you often see that a particular move is made to add the new channel or maybe launch a product line that's targeted to a new type of customer. And sometimes these are not, you know, it might be a successful venture from an external facing perspective, but it actually doesn't make the company any additional money. It can often be sometimes a big drag. It can be, and it's hard to unwind those. And this is something that I've always personally seen, is really hard to get that insight, to get those numbers sometimes. I'm curious, you know, what are some of the things you're doing to help your customers get that insight? Because I think that sounds like a very valuable one.
Yeah, Mark, this has been the fun part about, you know, like I mentioned, ShipBob is a technology-driven company. We are, I brand us as a technology-driven 3PL or third-party logistics provider, right? But what we are really based in is data and technology. And so, you know, throughout our history, that's about 10, 11 years old almost now, everything we've done is to have a technology layer on top, meaning what we'll do in direct consumer fulfillment is certainly make sure your package gets out on time, has, you know, what we have is what we call SLAs or service level agreements. Packages get out within the first 10 to 24 hours, they're out the door, gets to the end buyer. But the big piece around this that we wrap is the analytics to be able to start to look at the metrics of your business and diagnose how you're doing originally in direct to consumer, right? And so the biggest piece that we're allowing merchants originally to do in our D2C fulfillment side was to actually see what's happening in their business and start to see the impacts from a cost standpoint of this very big investment side that comes in logistics. And so that's one of the pieces we've expanded into our retail sector is starting to be able to say, gosh, what is it costing you to send one unit, one pallet, one truckload to Target or Walmart? And is that what you expect versus your other channels that you now get to compare that to what we have as D2C breakdowns of what you make on one unit, those types of things. And so now we've started to set up this really nice analytics package that gets our merchants accustomed to being able to break down the cost of fulfillment. And they can do the same type of thing as they look into different channels that they now service through ShipBob.
Awesome. That's really interesting. That's pretty cool. And I think of like, I think a lot of people out there think of a 3PL just as it's a warehouse for hire, if you will, right? Give me some place. I'm buying some space to source stuff and then send you a list of orders to fulfill every day and those go out the door. But it feels like there's a lot more to it that you're offering, and especially around those value added services. And am I kind of understanding that correctly and how you're differentiating there?
Yeah, it's certainly a big part of it. And you're right. The traditional kind of 3PL model was we have a warehouse, we have an ability to put your goods in here, and we'll make sure it gets to the right end place. And that's certainly a part of our model as well. But we've been able to take it further. I think one of the things I've recognized within SMB brands, and there could be a larger movement of this as well, but just within our merchant bases, really the desire, or in some cases, the necessity to get more out of each vendor relationship. And I think a lot of this is because of the strain on economics that come through a lot of things happening in the macro environment. But each vendor relationship you have, there's a necessity to hopefully get more out of that, right? And so if your 3PL can also be your data insights to how better run your business and how to think about what channels to accelerate or not, it's a place where they can start to think about, well, a lot of my merchants used to have brokers to get into retail and brokers would guide them. You know, many of them are now getting direct connections from a Target to say, do you want to come into retail? And so this brokerage arm often isn't necessary, but there's a gap in there as who provides analytics. And so we're in a place as a 3PL being data driven that we have a chance to say, let's expose those in our dashboard. Let's show you how Target is performing, those types of things. So, yeah, I think the biggest trend that we see from these SMBs is the necessity to have a vendor provide more. And that's the place where ShipBob's really well versed in, being able to expose data, being able to break down what's most crucial to a D2C and a retail driven business.
Interesting. So almost in a way you're bringing some more enterprise level functionality and analytics around these channels down to the SMB market, then something that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get without rolling themselves.
Yeah. And I think you've probably seen this across, as you think about the amount of partnerships that can be out there, when we look at a Procter & Gamble or some of these larger type enterprise businesses, they're certainly going to have access to a business intelligence tool, many different teams and data science teams that can focus on that and spend lots of time optimizing their supply chain network, right? When we look at our SMB merchants that are often founder-led and have very small supply chain teams, these are the types of things that they require from somebody. They don't often get it from a 3PL, but in the world of ShipBob, that's possible. We have a pretty cool case study that we have out there with a pet merchant that's grown to over $100 million in revenue with only four people within their supply chain team. And the reason they're able to do that is they leverage ShipBob to do analytics. They leverage ShipBob to do optimizations to say, where should the product be? When should the inventory come in? And they've been able to grow a global network with ShipBob by doing that. And so it's a pretty cool thing to see that, when you think about it, where you want to invest in your business as a small brand, you need to think about, there's only so many things you can do. And most of our brands are really good at marketing because that's what their backbone is. when they can spend time in marketing their own business and not have to think about how do I grow supply chain or how do I grow my capabilities, it's a really good place for them to scale the business further.
I have a quick question, Wes. So it seems like you really spend a lot of time catering and taking care of these, like you said, small business owners, or I guess growing business owners who might have gone viral or grown really quickly, but don't necessarily have the skills or the knowledge or the team size to really expand as much as they can or as quickly as they can. And I mean, just for example, you know, something that ShipBob recently unveiled or unrolled was Fulfilled by TikTok, where you're helping TikTok creators scale their business and ensure that, you know, shipping and orders are taken care of and sent out. I'm curious what else you do, whether it's software alone, whether it's education. How are you striving to help these small business owners who might just be a person behind a phone and nothing more? How do you help them succeed where, you know, they're competing with these enterprise companies, Amazon, Target, Walmart, and while they're competing against like an omni-channel attack from those larger companies?
Yeah, Jordan, I love the question because this is something that really has been a big focus and investment area for ShipBob in the last number of years. But it's also, you know, come to fruition now that we've been able to bring a global capability to our merchants. But the biggest thing that it starts with for our SMBs is the ability to scale as they need. So ShipBob is a place where, depending on if you want to, you know, slowly invest and grow your business or you have that viral moment, it can happen. But I think, Jordan, what we found for these SMB leaders is, you know, they don't have the experience across all the other areas you mentioned. A really big part of this is how do you take that next step by understanding what your peers are doing? So we've had the fortunate, you know, of being in this relationship with TikTok that allows us to say, here's what we've seen as the strategies that are working and are not working on TikTok. There's a lot of things that come out that say, you know, it's a lot of trial and error that can happen. Our hope, and especially the way that we approach it from a merchant success standpoint and account management, is here's the things that we've already seen work within the TikTok world. Most of that means, you know, utilize influencers. That's where we've seen it the best. Here's introductions we can make. Here's technology pieces we can make a play in there. And so, you know, we always like the term of being able to see around the corners. And how do we help those merchants and small brands see around the corners so they don't have to go invest those marketing dollars in trial and error in TikTok or Instagram and things of that nature? And it's not a, you know, foolproof way and one size fits all, but having the chance to have really good exposure to merchants who have been successful and brands who have had that, it's a really good community that we can build and pass along for the right ways to do it, or at least some really good ways to start.
Seems like that type of experience is exactly aligned with what Mark was asking in terms of bringing enterprise tech and enterprise knowledge into the SMB market. And it seems like you guys are obviously doing that very well, considering you have hundreds of thousands of orders already being, you know, shipped out. And that was a few months ago when you made this release. Sorry for interrupting, Mark. I know you were on. You
had TikTok is a powerful platform. It's a powerful platform. That is for sure.
Well, I know I like the question, Jordan. So it is what you mentioned, Wes. TikTok is a very powerful platform, and we see almost, you know, depending on your perspective, how long you've been around, this is a second or third coming of social commerce, if you will. I'm curious to get your take on this version of it. And is this it? Is this the time when is this the cycle where it really takes off? What do you see there? What are the trends you see in the potential in it right now?
Yeah, Mark, and you and I probably could have a good long conversation in it. That, to be candid, you know, social commerce, I thought, has been pretty underwhelming up until TikTok, to be honest. Like, if I look at, especially, you know, back in my history and days with Magento, we had a very big push around Facebook commerce. And that was one of the great integration point. And to be honest, between, you know, Facebook and Instagram, and there was a Twitter version at some point, like, none of that really took off. But all, you know, from the exposure I have to TikTok, which is intimate in some places, is that this is a much different, you know, trajectory it's been on. And the shopability that comes with TikTok Shop is much different than what's come before it. So I don't know if it's the end all be all, Mark, but I do know that it's been much more effective and successful, both from a buyer standpoint when I'm interacting with it, and from a fulfillment standpoint, you know, having brands that are on there. So, you know, there's certainly been something that's been found, you know, an insight that we've started to see. And I think this is where, you know, Mark, there's still gaps and areas that will need to evolve in social commerce. We mostly see that those very quick buy type items are what are really successful, right? The t-shirt, the things you buy more frequently. And when you get to either higher priced items or appliances or things of that nature, certainly have not been as successful, or and maybe haven't found that right niche in there. So there's maybe something else that comes, but it certainly moves the most volume of anything I've seen in the social commerce world.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It kind of felt like this was the tipping point, like it's finally clicking in. And like you mentioned, been through some of those early days, the Facebook marketplace, things like that. I remember building in my consulting days, building solutions around that. And you know, everyone very, very excited about it. You build these solutions, and it didn't quite come to fruition. And I see something very different here. Like the scene, it seems to finally be clicking for the right type of product. And I think that's the key thing. Certain things are very applicable, some aren't, but the ones that are and tie together that, you know, that very fast moving trendiness aspect, you know, highly dependent on influencers, seem to really kind of click on all cylinders and work well. And we certainly see a lot of interest from our customers in that as well. And, you know, I got a recent chance to meet some of the TikTok team that's based up here in the Northwest and get a sense of, like, you know, the customers that they're working with and the volume that they're seeing, just the number of companies that are approaching them and across the breadth. And in a lot of ways, I was thinking, I was like, oh, there'll be a lot of smaller e-commerce companies adding another channel. They might just be, they might only have a Shopify store. This might be their second channel. It might be maybe the third. They've got an Amazon one too as well. But no, I mean, really, hearing about everything under the sun, enterprise companies coming in and tapping into this. So it really opened my eyes to, like, wow, this is getting a momentum behind it that haven't really seen yet in the social commerce, and kind of made in my mind, it was kind of like, okay, this is probably when it really takes off. Is my guess, but you know, my crystal ball is cloudy sometimes.
Well, Mark, this will be an interesting thing, and I don't know if you have any thoughts here, but the one area where, you know, social has been a really big part of most of the brands I've been a part of, you know, there was always a very big Instagram or other component because of the repeatability of the metrics, right? And so while it wasn't the end all be all for, you know, social commerce, there was a very repeatable way to go about putting marketing dollars in and having an ROI on those. And a bit of that got skewed over the last few years, whether it's Apple iOS changes and things like that. So, you know, what I'll be curious on within TikTok's future, and I don't know if you've seen any of this yet, but is how does this become repeatable? Because I mentioned the influencer place that we've seen is a really big boost, right? But these are these kind of short-term boosts. And then what happens after is you got to find another piece, right? And so I'll be curious if this gets to a repeatability standpoint, or is it always these big bang and bust type scenarios out of there?
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point about the repeatability and almost the algorithmic approach to marketing, so to speak, right? And I can think back, you know, quite a few years. I don't want to date myself too much, but 15 plus years ago, at the time you had to roll all of this yourself, but in the end, the principles have held through the same. If you know your margin for your goods, you know your cost to acquire this customer, you know your margin on the sale, you know your lifetime value of your customer. If you can profile that even further, you're doing even better. But you essentially pour the money into those campaigns until they break even or get to your threshold, and it's really, in some ways, pretty simple. It's hard to execute well. It's a lot of work and a lot of really technical details. But when you get it, it's a really fantastic thing. And it took marketing from you know, something that was very, very tangible, even in not just B2C, but even in B2B to a certain extent. And I think is pretty amazing, but you bring up a good point. It's gotten a lot fuzzier. And if this somehow creates through any new channel that creates a much more repeatable mechanism, I think that tells a lot to any business leader that's thinking about, should I go in this direction? It'd be like, how well can I measure that? How easily can I get the ROI on that? And I think if the answer is yes, that's going to tell us a lot about where someone should go, A, and then B, what's going to stick around and really last.
I like the perspective. You know, what's interesting about, and this is where enterprise and small brands have a similarity, at least, you know, our small brands that are becoming into that medium specter, also starting to get into retail, those kind of things, right? So I think many enterprise brands that are making investments in TikTok and thinking about some level of social commerce, not always looking for, you know, acquisition at the point of entry and saying, let's make a sale today. There's always an attribution to, are we getting exposure? And does that lead to a sale in retail or whatever it might be? So many of my small or medium brands that are in retail will start to look at that and say, even if we're not making a sale at point of sale in a social commerce scenario, does that give us benefits in other channels? And so I don't know if it's been proven out one way or another yet for the larger brands that type of exposure can help. You know, the attribution is great when you can make a sale right there and click through. But do you get anything beneficial out for a longer term besides that one time buy?
Yeah. And that's where things have been fuzzy. And I think they continue to be fuzzy, you know? Excellent. You know, Wes, one thing I wanted to kind of take us back to a little bit was, you mentioned the profile of customers that you work with, SMB customers are often growing. They're reaching that key inflection point. And traditionally, I think from my perspective, and this is coming from Soligo, working with a lot of companies in that, you know, thousands of customers in that, that e-commerce space that are growing in high growth, but also previously in my consulting background, the same thing was, I always saw this inflection point with e-commerce companies. And traditionally, and I'm a little biased here because it's often oriented around an ERP implementation. They reach a certain point and it doesn't, QuickBooks and something else, and there's been various different flavors of order management systems sitting on top, QuickBooks Plus didn't seem to meet their needs. And so I think for a long time there was, you know, I think about for 7, 8, 10 years, there was this movement to, okay, you reach this inflection point. And very often it's, hey, I'm selling on multiple channels because now I've got much more complex operational requirements around inventory. And you talked a lot about the visibility, the need for visibility. So these often drove this, hey, we're going to invest. And really it was a digital transformation, but nobody called it that. It was, hey, we're going to get a modern ERP, order management, inventory control system, you know, maybe usually all bundled, but some, you know, different ways to package it. And then that's it from a Soligo perspective, we usually get brought in because now you're implementing that. You want to automate it, integrate it to your 3PL, for example, your sales channels, all of that. But, and that was, I felt like the standard pattern. And what I've started to see emerging more and more is an alternate pattern to this as some of the, as more and more solutions out there have emerged. And some of these are from like ShipBob providing more data visibility from a perspective of the, a 3PL perspective, sometimes even a 3PL providing more of sort of multi-channel order management, even taking on that inventory control functionality for their customers. And so I've seen this alternate path develop where a company, an e-commerce startup can move through and become really grow to be much higher in revenue without having to go down the traditional ERP implementation path. And I know it's kind of a long lead up, but I think it's a super interesting, at least for me, it's an interesting topic. And I'm curious to hear, have you seen anything? Do you see the same pattern? Do you see, I just kind of want to get your take on that, what you're seeing out there.
Yeah. It's funny, you mentioned the ERP market. That's what jumps to my mind. It's like, that's kind of that big investment you need to make. Yep. But I'll give you a couple examples where I've seen that be a different place that our merchants take. And maybe it's a lightweight, but you know what, the very beginning of this as a small business is different than it used to be. Maybe not 5 years ago, but certainly 10 years ago, right? If you're going to have a technology, you used to go out and think about the amount of servers you might buy and how many do you need to do to make a first investment, right? Well, now you go to AWS, you go to, you know, the Google version or the Microsoft version, and you can buy a very small portion of that. So you can quickly get set up technology-wise mm-hmm. with just piecemeal type pieces that are truly enterprise grade, right? So like you're getting the best server technology as Facebook is in a sense, right? But this is where when you start to get, so, you know, the ShipBob position of this is we become the inventory system of record for many of our small businesses up to a certain point. But many of our businesses do reach that inflection point, you know, a bit of an omni-channel version now that you're in different channels and you start to have a need to have a visibility of your inventory besides what sits in your warehouse, right? You want to think about what's coming from manufacturing, you want to think about those. And then there becomes a true kind of, you know, broader business structure need around the accounting function and some of these other types mm-hmm. of things. So it certainly comes there. The biggest thing that I've seen and you know, the typical move used to be towards how do we go to a NetSuite or some of these that are a little more robust.
Yeah.
We've had many of our merchants go to what I would call kind of vertical specific lighter weight ERPs. And these are, of course, cloud-based that really start to go to the types of, you know, vertical they play in. So whether it's apparel or consumer packaged goods, those types of things. And so, again, they go a little bit different than even our server example, where you can start to get set up with not a 6 or 12 month, you know, development project. These are things that you can plug in over a matter of weeks and months and have up and running. So I think it's an interesting way to grow a business. I think that what we found with a couple of our really highly scaling merchants is they will still outgrow that type of thing. So I think there is an ironic version that's happened there where you have this almost middle place you get to on a lighter weight ERP and you say, this is actually great for what I need today. And then you find you're growing at such a rapid rate that, you know, in another 18 months, you say, oh, I've already outgrown this. And the ultimate jump that I maybe should have made to a more, you know, closer to enterprise grade version might still need to happen. So I think matching that, you know, whether it's investment or growth profile with what you're going out to search from a technology standpoint, very important.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point about those solutions. If you're really on high growth and you're growing aggressively, you're going to exceed their capabilities. And I think this is really the true of any out of the box solution, because ultimately you go with anything that's too out of the box. And the question is, well, what are you getting? Well, you're getting speed of implementation, time to value, like rapid time to value. And, you know, to be honest, it's alleviating a lot of the work. And the natural question is, well, why? Well, it's because it's generally making a lot of business process decisions for you. They're already made. You're buying those with it, but it's taken a point of view that, well, may apply to 80% of the companies in your revenue size, whether you're looking at a vertical ERP solution, whether you're looking at a point-to-point connector integration, where you're looking at it sometimes some pre-canned inventory control thing that's tacked onto a fulfillment solution or something. But what I think a business leader really needs to ask themselves is, how am I differentiating as a business, and how will I differentiate in the future? Because if your differentiation involves something that is a little bit different than your competitors and it manifests itself in the business process, then ultimately this isn't going to be a good fit. You're actually locking yourself in and removing a leg of differentiation. And I don't know if you see that same thing, but that's what I've seen a lot in this space. That it's like, you really got to be honest with you. Like, where are we different and why are we different?
Absolutely. And what you end up doing, you know, when you go with the more cookie cutter solution, which can be okay for a short term, is you then end up scaling your business or structuring your business by that. And in some cases it could be okay, but for many new businesses that want to grow at their certain rate or have their product line expand the way they see fit, those are the types of things that really, you know, you can get hamstrung by having a cookie cutter solution version. And you know, you want to, you know, go into a new vertical, you want to create new product sets that are maybe outside of your original. And if you don't have a version of customization in there, you'll be in a tough place. It's interesting because I of course, have an order management background, having Magento, and Magento had a piece connected into there. And we used to have merchants all the time say, like, gosh, why do I want to go out and pay for the development of this? And it's and it's basically the same reason you want to, you know, have your own home to live into, right? It's okay to be at a hotel, you know, every once in a while. But if you're going to be in something long term and something you see yourself in extended periods of time, this is why you go through that development effort.
I have a quick question, because that's a fantastic metaphor. And I'm wondering for those people that are looking for a long-term home and wanting to choose the right piece of software to be their long-term home. Of course, Sligo, we're an IPaaS company. We deal with automations and integrations all day long. What role do you see, whether it's for your customers or within ShipBob, that like integration and automation plays when choosing that enterprise level piece of software?
Jordan, I'll maybe give you a little bit of a roundabout answer, because there's an irony that happens right now in the 3PL world. You know, the concept of EDI is a very old technology. EDI is 60 plus years old, right?
Sure.
And so there's this irony that everything that happens with retailers is EDI driven, right? And, you know, likely the right way to go about technology is some of API integrations or some of these other types of things. And so most of the systems out there aren't looking to be EDI based. And so at least from a perspective of somebody who's at a technology based 3PL, you almost have these two things that are at ends. And, you know, the way that we've solved through this is some level of middleware to make sure that we can always stay, we can accept EDI, but we have an opportunity to keep it in an API or whatever the types of things that work best for the ShipBob system. And honestly, many of our merchants' connection and integration points, right? And so it's funny because you say enterprise grade, and I almost laugh, like, Mark, you'll know some of these types of systems, of course, anything green screen and all these other types of things. Like, some of the biggest organizations out there, especially even in CPG, still run those types of, you know, systems. Costco historically runs like a very, very old types of technology system, right? And so there's almost an irony with enterprise grade and new technology. Most of the new technology happens at small businesses. They're agile, they pivot, those kind of things. And so we're in an interesting place, Jordan, that we have kind of both areas. Of course, our small businesses are going to use much newer technology. They're going to jump from technology sometimes every 6 and 12 months, depending on the growth of their business sometimes. But we're still needing to go with some of the older guard technology. We're still needing to use EDI to make sure they can receive retail orders, things of that nature. So what I've actually seen is having a provider or thinking about your partners that are able to flex to some other areas, and whether it's open APIs or the ability to think about different types of technology ingested and then make it simplistic for, you know, the end user or the end integration, that's been the most feasible that we've gone about.
That differentiation makes a lot of sense. And for the listeners out there, that's why I'm not a VP at a technology company. Mark, we got
EDI may never die, I hear. So I don't know, Mark, if you have an opinion.
You know, the first time I took a look at an EDI document, gosh, it was probably 25, 30 years ago. And I was like, wow, look at this thing. This is ancient. And yeah. Everyone's like, this is going away. This is going to be replaced. And you know what? It's still here. And as an organization at Sligo, you know, we've been very API focused, try to focus on modern, you know, connecting cloud apps, where it's going. But the reality is that EDI isn't going anywhere. We've been supporting it in different ways. And to the point that we have actually made a major investment over the last 18 months into supporting it in a first-class way, because the reality was, it's going to be here for another 20, 30, 40 years. It's simply entrenched so much, and you have to work with it. And the value is giving companies the ability to work with the legacy, the EDI, the old technology, but also very easily work with it in a way that they would work with a more modern API and try to bring it, you know, live with it, but bring it into the modern age. So it's interesting. I'm not surprised at all that you're seeing the same thing, Wes.
Yeah, it'll never die. But I think you're right. Like, even when I see small businesses think about, geez, they have no choice but to use EDI in some fashion, but how do we make it digestible for us? And I think same thing with Sligo. That's been ShipBob's, method and purpose is how do we almost make it so small, medium business don't even have to deal with that side of it, and they get to know their technology is going to integrate with it. So,
well, Wes, that was a fantastic way to wrap that up. And thank you for humoring me and answering my question. We're pretty close to time, and I know you have a baseball game to get off and coach, and so we want to make sure that we are respectful of that. Just to wrap things up, maybe take a minute or so of your time, but for those still listening, would you mind humanizing yourself outside of the role of vice president of a technology company, and you know, let the listeners know what are your passions, hobbies, and interests, and then we'll send you on your way.
I'd love to. Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it. So yes, I'm here in Southern California. I've got two young kids, a 7-year-old daughter, a 5-year-old son. My passions used to be golfing a lot before my passions became coaching t-ball and things of that nature. So it's become a lot of fun things we now get to do with our kids. Our kids now got into soccer, which I never played. And now I'm figuring out how I can teach somebody to kick a ball ever not having ever known those kind of things. But then some of the things start to come right back into my passions. I grew up playing ice hockey, and my youngest 5-year-old son just started. So I'm going to be out there on the ice with him. I've been putting him on roller blades and doing street hockey around here. So my passions from old have come back anew, which is pretty fun.
That is fantastic. I'm sure you're aware, but there's not much ice in Southern California. So I do wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for being a fantastic guest on this podcast. Again, I'm Jordan Tenenbaum. This is the Technology Leaders Podcast. We will see everyone next week with a brand new episode. Wes and Mark, thanks for joining as always. I'll see you guys around.
Thank you.
Great to be here.